This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. This week, I'm going to be talking about the new films Don't Breathe, Hands of Stone, Mechanic Resurrection, South Side with You, Equity, and Don't Think Twice. Lots of movies to talk about this week. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, box office predictions, and of course, the home cinema roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news I want to talk about is something that's sort of rearing its ugly head again. Leslie Jones, best known now for being in the new Ghostbusters movie. Apparently, her site was hacked this week, and there were pictures of her driver's license, her passport, and plus nude and sexually explicit pictures of her posted on the site. Now, that's, of course, all been taken down, but there's a couple things that stood out to me on this. And if you want to know the timeline of this, basically what happened is about a month ago, while Ghostbusters was rolling out, she got in a Twitter feud with this guy and started complaining and responding to him and responding to other people who were following this guy. And she was being bullied and then quit Twitter in a huff and was all upset and got this guy from Breitbart kicked off of Twitter. And I remember saying back then, the problem started not when this guy started harassing her, because, you know, that's, you're a public figure and you're on the internet. This happens. People harass you. You got to deal with that. And especially if you're a comedian out there and with her, who has her entire shtick is based a lot on racial humor anyways, you're going to get blowback. But the biggest problem was she started to respond to him. Don't respond to your critics. I mean, not on Twitter. I mean, if I give you a bad review on a movie, come after me and call me an idiot. That's fine. That's a direct response for something that I'm responding. But not just some nameless, faceless goon on the internet. Don't respond to the trolls. The second you start to wrestle with that pig, all you're going to do is get dirty and the pig's going to love it. And what's interesting is she had tweeted out something inflammatory about this guy. When he called her out on it, this is back a month ago, she's like, oh, my Twitter account was hacked, which is the celebrity online version of a musician going into the hospital for exhaustion. We all know it's drugs, but they call it exhaustion. That's like all the girls that you ever knew who got an abortion in high school and college or whatever. They're all like, oh, no, we use birth control. No, you didn't. The math doesn't work out. So she had already claimed she got hacked with her Twitter account. There was no real investigation of it. That's all she says. She should take a nod from the presidential candidates. I mean, you got Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton saying things about each other and getting on their soapbox as politicians on their Twitter page. They're not responding directly to individual critics because there's plenty on both sides for both of these people. Well, Leslie Jones engaged with the negativity, and the theory is that some of these trolls got PO'd and went after her website and hacked her phone. But this is the thing that, to me, just doesn't quite add up. I understand celebrities having nude pictures of themselves. I think it's stupid. You're an idiot if you do, by the way. Look, if you're a girl, if you're just an attractive woman, you're an idiot to put any nude pictures of yourself on your cell phone. Because I've actually talked to people who've worked in cell phone departments, and they say when something comes in for maintenance, the first thing they do, they look for good pictures and then text them to themselves and then erase the texts. If you have anything on your phone, or God forbid in the cloud, it's going to be accessible. Apparently that's where they got these nude pics. But my question is, why did she have her driver's license and passports, images of these, in the cloud? It is, by definition, unsecure because it's accessible from a mobile device. It's not a real cloud, people. All the cloud is just some server somewhere that you have remote access to, which means somebody gets any sort of password or access to your device, they have access to your stuff. it's mind-boggling to me that people still do this. Who keeps personal, like, sensitive documents on the cloud? That's just an that's insane. That's like doing your tax returns and keeping them on your phone. I have all the sympathy for her, but it's like, I knew somebody once, a colleague of mine, and she had this computer that got a virus and it wiped out her machine. And I said to her, I go, well, you got a backup, don't you? And she's like, no. I like, oh, you've never backed up. You don't have any backup? She's never backed up her machine. For like 10 years, she had all this work, never had virus protection, never backed up her machine. She lost it all. I had all the sympathy in the world for her, but I was kind of like, I don't know what to say. You should have protected yourself better, but, you know, and that doesn't make it okay that the virus did this or the people who wrote the virus did this. That doesn't excuse them, but it's like leaving your door open when you walk off to vacation. You don't leave your house for a week wide open and people can come in and take your stuff. That's still burglary, but it's a dumb move on your part. At least give them a challenge. The other piece of news I want to talk about, I'm going to talk about this a little bit more in the box office segment, is Ben-Hur did notoriously terrible this weekend. I'll talk more about the budget risk to return, but the big question people said, well, are biblical epics over? And my answer to that is they've always been over. We haven't had biblical epics since the 50s, really. Oh yeah, Passion of the Christ. Everyone talks Passion of the Christ. That was an anomaly. Look at the list of disappointments of big budget religious epics. A Nativity Story, Exodus, Gods and King, Noah, even Risen, which I kind of liked. It didn't do huge money. Now, everyone says, well, Son of God clicked. First of all, it was a budget thing. It cost nothing to put that in theaters in terms of production because all they did, they already had the movie made. It was part of the miniseries. And even then, it didn't even top $60 million in the United States. So it was just gravy for an already produced TV series. There hasn't been a big biblical epic in decades. I mean, they take Passion of the Christ aside because that's the outlier. That is the exception. When you look at the numbers, actually, Ben-Hur made almost exactly as much in its opening weekend as War Room did. War Room seen as a hit. Why? Because War Room cost $3 million and Ben-Hur cost $100. Ultimately, though, Sword and Sandal movies don't do very well. Not in the grand scale. I mean, in the last couple of years, like Prince of Persia, Immortals, Legend of Hercules, 300, Rise of an Empire, Pompeii. Look at all these movies that bombed and there were Sword and Sandals movies. We've had a couple, like the original 300, Troy did okay, but aside from that, the genre has not really been a big deal over the last 30 years. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first movie I want to talk about is Rings, the next in the Ring series. Opens on October 28th, Halloween weekend.
There's this video that kills you 7 days after you watch it.
That's when she's coming for me.
7 days, 7 days. You want to know about the girl in the well.
What does she want from me?
This mark on your hand. It says rebirth.
This looks like it could be good, but it also looks like it could be ridiculous and stupid. It looks like it's trying to address all the issues that have come up since the original Ring, where the Ring, I mean, it was a VHS tape, and there was actual phones attached to walls back in 2002 when it was exported to the United States. I mean, the original movie from Japan from the late 90s. So now you got cell phones and TVs are very different, and how people watch TV and how they watch videos are very different. It's trying to address that, and it might just collapse under that, because I think the Ring might have been something that could only work in a pre-smartphone world. The next one I want to talk about is Kidnap. Opens on December 2nd.
My son's been kidnapped.
If you wait with me here, ma'am, we'll file a report right now.
That's what all these people did.
They waited.
Let me tell you something. As long as my son is in that car, I will not stop.
Now, this stars Halle Berry as a woman who's going after the people who kidnapped her son. Actually, it sounds like a very simple concept, but it does look like it's this relentless chase movie. Only she's the one chasing. I mean, it looks like it's going to be one of those movies like Taken that just goes and goes and goes and goes and goes and doesn't let up. Which, if it does that, it might be a fun movie. Comes out in December, which is kind of an odd choice, but there you go. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Mechanic Resurrection and Hands of Stone. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies. Let's dive right into the movie reviews. The first film is Mechanic Resurrection. Jason Statham returns as an assassin who kills people by making it look like an accident, only to be forced into taking one final job.
The principal I represent has an offer for you. Each death must look like an accident. Your specialty, I believe.
I'm not doing his kills. I've been waiting too long to get even with you.
You have 36 hours to eliminate all the targets on this list. Or they will eliminate me.
There's no sign of the intruder, Mr. Adams.
That's because he's sitting right in front of me here in the safe room.
I'm not going to mince words here. This movie is crap. But it's good crap. There's a difference. If you are at all a film fan, you have watched your fair share of crap. And in fact, if you are a real film fan and a fan of whatever genre you choose, whether it's action, it's horror, sci-fi, romantic comedy, drama, biblical epic, you sort of revel in the crap that's out there. I love horror movies. And as much as I love good horror movies, I also like sort of cheesy, crappy horror movies. They're fun. Yeah, they've got to be buried in the sand for 2 or 3 decades to really enjoy them. I mean, something like Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, pragmatically is not a good movie. I mean, if you were to stack up all the elements that make that movie come together, none of them are good. You've got an unlikable hero. You've got kind of a boring narrative. You've got corniness, silliness, things happening that make no sense, and sort of gore for gore's sake at times, and the logic of that film doesn't even work. But looking at it 30, 35 years later, it's such an enjoyable film for me because it's so absurd and silly, and it's such a relic of the 80s. In the same way, these movies that Canon Films made, like all the Chuck Norris movies, like Missing in Action, or Code of Silence, or Invasion USA, these movies are not good movies. They often don't make sense. They have silly dialogue. The characters are not terribly well developed. And it's just an excuse to be exploitative and action-y. Just as Quentin Tarantino loves kung fu movies, I love sort of those 80s action movies. They're terrible, but they're fun. And Mechanic Resurrection certainly had the feel of that type of movie. It was the movie that wanted to be a Bond film that would have been made like by Canon. Something that wanted to be an American Bond film, but just didn't have the budget to do it. And yeah, I know Mechanic Resurrection had like a budget of $40 million, but it has this opening sequence that feels so much like a Bond film. And it takes place on a sky ride, one of those cable car. And they've done that in Bond movies before. That's sort of a signature piece in, it's either Moonraker or For Your Eyes Only or something like that. They've done this before, but it works in this movie too. And it's done sort of partially. It's not as excessive as a Bond movie, but it's a nice little opening action scene. And the character's very cheesy. He's out there just sort of saving somebody because he feels she should be saved and he can't walk away. And part it's Jessica Alba's who he's got to save, and yeah, she's gorgeous. I mean, the story doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It's silly, it's ridiculous, it's extremely violent, but it has some really fun action scenes to it. I enjoyed the heck out of watching this movie. I'm watching it going, nothing about this movie's good. Acting, story, plot, characters, it's crap. But it's perfectly enjoyable crap. It's the kind of thing you can go see on a Saturday afternoon as escapist entertainment. And, you know, if you don't mind a lot of people getting shot and ironically, a weird number of boats blowing up. You can enjoy this movie. It's exploitation, action cinema, and it's better than some of the direct-to-video garbage that Statham tends to do. So I'm going to have to say that Mechanic Resurrection, surprisingly, kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Hands of Stone. The career of Panamanian boxer Roberto Duran is examined in this biopic.
In 66 seconds, Roberto Duran changed my life.
He grew up in the streets, fought everything, hating everybody. He's wild.
Duran should fight no one but me. I don't lose.
You put God in the ring, and I will beat him.
And now, Sugar Ray Leonard.
I'm not a boxing fan. I don't think I've ever sat down and watched, I mean, aside from clips on the news and in movies and in retrospectives or something, I've never sat down and watched a boxing match. I come from Columbus, Ohio, and Buster Douglas beat Mike Tyson. Douglas was from Columbus, Ohio. I didn't watch that. Partly because it costs, you know, like $89 on a pay-per-view, and I'm not going to watch that. But I don't care about boxing. But, you know, certain things sort of creep into the mainstream, and I had never heard of Roberto Duran, but I had heard of Sugar Ray Leonard. And Sugar Ray Leonard, obviously, if those who remember, those who follow boxing, there was a huge rivalry between the two of them. That kind of is where this movie comes to a head. But it's not about Sugar Ray Leonard, no matter how much you see him in the trailer. It's really about Roberto Duran, who, you know, he had a rough life. He grew up on the streets in Panama, and he started fighting when he was very young. So he's a bit of a hard-edged guy. The problem is he doesn't seem to be a very nice guy. And it's really, really hard to make a movie where the person you're supposed to root for, you don't like. And not even in a charming way. I mean, we're not talking like an anti-hero. We're not talking about something like what Suicide Squad was supposed to be, root for the bad guys. This is a movie about a sleazy, smarmy guy. And to make matters worse, they have this whole story with his wife, played by Ana de Armas, who was in War Dogs last week. And she was the one who I said she was too gorgeous to be in that movie. She just, it was like him dating a model. And now in this movie, she plays his wife, but they met like when he was like 17 and she was 14, supposedly. At least that's the story I read on the internet. And they have the scene where Edgar Ramirez, playing Duran, is kind of stalking her when she's like a schoolgirl. And it's uncomfortable to watch. Part of it is because Edgar Ramirez is almost 40 and he's supposed to be playing when he was like 19, 18, 19, 17 or whatever. But he kind of physically assaults her, and it's creepy. It's really creepy. The way they were shooting it, it was like, oh, isn't this sweet? It is adorable. Two kids in love. Where really it looks like a 40-year-old man trying to get in the pants of a 14-year-old girl. Now, of course, the actress is much older, and then she ends up doing a pretty egregious nude scene, which I fully appreciated and support, by the way. And when she's older and she's sort of like the smart-talking wife, you know, when she's in her 20s, the character, it's not as creepy, but yeah, I didn't like the guy. I didn't like Edgar Ramirez. I don't think he's that compelling of a guy. He's had many shots at being in big movies like Point Break or Joy last year, but ultimately the movie I didn't like the guy. I couldn't support him. I couldn't get behind him. And then you're going up against Sugar Ray Leonard, and Sugar Ray Leonard's, you know, he's had his issues over the years, but in boxing, he's kind of the more amiable character out there. He's no Mike Tyson. So I wanted to see more about Sugar Ray and see his story. But no, they were going back to this guy from Panama and his abusive career. Hands of Stone kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to continue with the movie reviews with Don't Breathe and Equity. there's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies. Let's continue with the movie reviews. The first one I'm going to be talking about in this segment is Don't Breathe. Three petty thieves break into a house of a blind vet in search of hidden cash, only to become the victims when he turns the tables on them.
Yo, I got our ticket out of here. Rumor is this guy is sitting on at least 300K. Boom!
That's your guy.
Wait, is he blind?
We messed up to rob a blind guy, isn't it?
Just because he's blind don't mean he's insane, bro.
Who's there?
Stay right there.
How many of you are there?
Just me, man, all right? Just let me go!
For as much as we've had flops in terms of big budget movies like Ben-Hur last week, or disappointing sequels like Alice Through the Looking Glass or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, this has actually been a really good summer for horror movies and thrillers in the mainstream. I mean, you had The Conjuring 2, which was a neat little movie, and then you had Lights Out, which was a lot of fun, and now we've got Don't Breathe, which is, it's not your traditional horror movie, because there's no monsters or vampires or ghosts, but it plays as a horror movie. It's done by the people who did Evil Dead, the remake, not the original Evil Dead, and it stars Jane Levy, who was in Evil Dead, the remake, a couple years ago. It also stars Stephen Lang as the blind vet, and I love Stephen Lang. I think Stephen Lang is an incredibly underrated actor. He doesn't get as much work as I'd love to see him get. But, I mean, he is ripped. He's, I don't know how old he is. He's probably in his late 50s, early 60s, at least. But this is not the kind of guy you want to meet in a dark alley or a dark house, blind or not. This guy looks like he could tear your arms off. And he is an intense, imposing person. So it's neat to see Stephen Lang get a real spotlight in this. Now, the movie itself is a home invasion movie with the tables turned. They invade his home, but then, of course, because he's blind and because it's his home, he's able to shut them all in and then go after them. And it becomes this cat and mouse game. It's very tense. And it's also more than what you expect it's going to be. There's a little bit more to it. Now, you know, don't watch the trailers with your own discretion because there might be a little bit of spoilery stuff happening in them. But it's a great movie to see somewhat clean and not knowing anything about because there's going to be some shockers and surprises to it. It's a real neat pairing with Green Room. If you remember Green Room from earlier this year, released, I believe, by A24. And it's one of Anton Yelchin's final films, unfortunately, because of that just tragic accident that killed him. Green Room was about this punk band that played at this basically a neo-Nazi club, and they witness something nefarious happen there, and they get trapped in the club, and of course the neo-Nazis are coming after them and they kill them. So it is, again, these people trapped in one location trying to get out, and that's essentially what's going on in Don't Breathe. Don't Breathe is relentless, it is grisly, it's very suspenseful. It takes a lot to make me cringe a little bit and tighten up in my seat. I see so many horror movies that it takes a lot to scare me. I'm not saying this scared me, but it had me almost physically on the edge of my seat. I really enjoyed what they did with this. And with the exception of a couple little hiccups in the movie where I'm like, that's a little odd. It played out very well. It played out very realistic. And the other thing that's interesting about it is all the characters in shades of gray, and they make decisions and they have these lofty goals that you know aren't going to pan out. In particular, Jane Levy's character, she has certain things motivating her and what she wants to do. And if you know anything about the way the world works, you can say, well, that's not going to work out well for you. There's going to be problems down the road, but you have this goal to get this cash and you want to do this thing in the future. But the characters, none of them are like good guys. I mean, they're criminals. They're breaking into houses and stealing people's money. And the fact that they are criminals and they are motivated so much by money, even when they can escape, makes it interesting because that's their hubris. That's their fatal flaw. That is weighing them down and keeping them in a bad situation when they could just get out of it. So Don't Breathe is a great little movie, a scary little film, and a neat little thriller. So it totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about equity. In the high-powered world of Wall Street, a female investment banker tries to successfully launch an IPO of a new security company.
I work for the largest investment bank in the world. I am so glad that it's finally acceptable for women to talk about success.
Are you still locking up drug dealers?
I'm actually in white-collar crime.
Get a file on us?
We have a file on everyone.
He give you anything on the hedge fund guy?
She's not going to give us anything.
Now, don't go doing anything rash. You're not in narcotics anymore.
I guess you've heard the talk.
They'll be naming a new global head.
I'm going to be frank with you.
The perception is that you run people the wrong way.
This is notable because it is a progressively feminist movie. Equity is produced by Broad Street Pictures. And Broad Street Pictures is run by Sarah Megan Thomas and Allison Reiner, and they're both in the movie. Usually when a star of a film is either the director or the producer, you can totally peg them because you're like, well, the weakest link. But these two women are actually quite good. I mean, the movie's centered on Anna Gunn, who is from Breaking Bad. Most people recognize her as Skyler from Breaking Bad. But these two women who run the production company are also in it. And they both do fine jobs acting in it. You don't feel like they're just thrown in there because they're producers. You know, it works as sort of like a female-driven Wall Street, where you see the greed that drives the business and the greed that drives some of these IPOs and the greed that drives investment banking and the dirty tricks that are done. Now, it's almost aggressively feminist because almost every single character that's in power, whether it be Anna Gunn's character, who is this lead investment banker, or her assistant, or the prosecutor who's coming after her, it's like aggressively feminist. Like the prosecutor, she's a lesbian, so of course you have that angle, and then which is fine. It's just it's almost becoming cliche now. And then one of them is pregnant, and she goes to the doctor. The doctor's a woman. One of them has a lawyer, and the lawyer's played by Margaret Collin, who's a woman. So you have a lot of these characters almost to an absurd level of any time there's anybody of a positive power, they're a woman, and then all the men are marginalized either as smarmy bad guys or slimy idiots. And I actually think that that's kind of clever because it's a nice turn of events, because normally most movies, the women are just there as eye candy or the vixen, and they've kind of turned the tables. The big problem I had with this movie was, while it worked as sort of this Wall Street thriller, it seems counterintuitive at times. It seems counterproductive. It seems that the message that this movie and the production company is trying to put forth is, this is about strong women and they're able to compete with men. They can be just as cutthroat and mean, and they can be just as compassionate, and they can be just as underhanded, and they can be just like men. But the problem is that the characters do tend to fall into typical cliche things that would be considered weak women things. Well, there's a scene where one of the characters loses her cool, and it's over chocolate. And I'm like, I could throw in some red wine in there as well. And you have the most cliched, woman having a bad day. See, and I'm like, that just seemed counterproductive for as aggressively feminist and progressive as this was trying to be. And there's like one of the characters, as I mentioned, she's pregnant. And so she's dealing with this emotion and fighting back tears during meetings or confrontations. You would never see that from a guy in a movie. And it seems like they're trying to say, well, we're just the same as guys, but they're falling into the same. I mean, there's a certain reality to that. Sure, a woman's pregnant and they're dealing with hormones and changes and the conflict of what to do once the baby's born. There's a lot of thought that goes into that. That's a realistic thing, but it's not politically correct to point it out, but somehow makes it into this movie, and it sort of seems counterproductive to certain things. And even when a woman's supposed to be doing something right, she's not doing it right. And it almost seems defeatist at a certain point. It almost seems that the message of the movie is that women can't compete on Wall Street. They're a bunch of loonies, which seems to be kind of how things tend to unravel in this movie. And Like I said, I just found that to be weirdly counterproductive. But still, Equity, I'm going to say, kind of rocks. Just kind of as a neat little thought experiment.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to review Don't Think Twice and Southside with you, talk about the box office, and do the home cinema roundup. Elizabeth Stokes' new romance novel, Five Nights in Vegas, is about meeting, getting married, and falling in love, in that order. Lexi Frost is a cocktail waitress in a Las Vegas casino. Nate Zimmerman is a marketing executive from back east. After a chance meeting on Nate's business trip, they wake up to discover they got married at an all-night wedding chapel. During their whirlwind attempt to undo their mistake, Lexi and Nate discover they might just be made for each other after all. Five Nights in Vegas by Elizabeth Stokes is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the movie reviews. I got two more to do, so let's get those out of the way really quickly. The first one I want to talk about is Southside with You. A young Barack Obama goes on his first date with Michelle Robinson in the summer of 1989.
Thought it wasn't a date?
It isn't.
Going to an awful lot of trouble for just another smooth-talking brother.
So what's this boy's name?
Barack Obama.
Barack Obama.
Well, Michelle, all set?
Shouldn't we be getting to the meeting?
We have some time. I thought we'd swing by the art center, see some paintings, maybe grab a bite to eat.
This is not a date. How's it gonna look if I start dating the first cute black guy who walks through the firm's doors? It would be tacky.
You think I'm cute?
I didn't say that.
I don't think it was initially going to have as big of a rollout as it is. I had heard that the number of theaters they put this in is in like 800 this weekend, and it's ramped up quite a bit over the last couple weeks. I think they're, of course, pushing for bigger turnouts. We'll see what happens. It's a very crowded weekend, actually. We've got a lot of movies. There's already three other major releases, and then there's a smaller one. So Southside with You fits in that slot where there's really not a good movie for maybe dates or for the more female-oriented audience. And it's obviously it's going to appeal to supporters of Barack Obama. I mean, let's get that out of the way first, okay? I'm not a political guy. I have my own political beliefs, but you know, I'm not going to get into a discussion of Barack and Michelle Obama and what I think of their politics or anything. But I am also aware that you can't do anything with the Obamas or Trump or the Clintons because they're politicians. That's who they are, and that's what they're best known for. So with that said, if you're a big fan of the Obamas and you think they have a wonderful love story, you're probably going to like this movie. You're going to enjoy it. It's going to speak to you because it's showing these two people who find each other, who then become the first couple. And it's kind of this inspiring little film. And they show Michelle, you know, that strong woman who kind of puts him in his place right at the beginning. And in a Barack Obama, he's not as slick and this smoothed over as he is when he becomes president. So he's a little more eager and he's a little bit more young and hungry in this movie. And if you like the first couple, you're going to like to watch them share a day together. I have no idea how accurate this is. I was not there. I was doing other things in 1989. The only people who really know what happened are the two of them. And I haven't gotten my call from Barack and Michelle yet to tell me, you know, what they thought of this movie. But that's what it is. It's a giant hour and a half meet cute. It's their first date. If you hate Barack Obama, you are tired of his politics and you think he's one of the worst presidents that we've ever had, and you think Michelle Obama is pushy and over assertive and you're posting memes on your Facebook wall, that you're probably not gonna like this movie. Cause even though they delve into politics here and there, but there's nothing overt about modern politics really. It's a lot of stuff that was going on in 1989. But you're not going to like it, because if you're not a fan of the Obamas, you're not going to be a fan of this movie that makes them look good. Now, taking the politics away from it, it's a fine little date movie. It's a like I said, it's an hour and a half meet cute. So ultimately, I'm going to have to say, take the politics outside of it. This is not a political movie. But just as a 1.5 hour meet cute, it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Don't Think Twice A team of improv comedians struggle to keep up with their performance in the light of family tragedy and one of the members getting his big break.
Hey, we're auditioning on Thursday for Weekend Live.
Congrats, man.
I auditioned for this show in 2003.
I can't take it anymore. I gotta focus on me. I'm gonna get the job at Weekend Live.
I like my life how it is right now.
You can't do improv forever, okay? It ends.
Your 20s are all about hope, and then your 30s are all about realizing how dumb it was to hope.
Before I started my illustrious career as a film critic and a radio personality, I did some independent movie making. In the process, I got to know a lot of actors, and I got to know in particular a group of improvisational actors in Columbus, Ohio. Some of them into the comedy, but all of them into the improvisation, not just the comedic side to it. Although I did know some comedic improvisational actors. And this really spoke to me because I knew them and I knew stand-up comics. And if you know those people, if you know actors and stand-up comics and people who are this close-knit group of performers who haven't made it yet, you should be able to connect with this because it transcends even just a movie about comedians. Although it does show that comedians do not see comedy and tragedy as even two, they're not two separate entities and they're not even two sides of the same coin. They're the same thing. Comedy and tragedy is the same thing. It's just how you phrase it is different. And there's a great scene in there where there's this really tragic thing happening and the comedians all work the comedy around this awful feeling, and it's the same feelings, it just comes out as a laugh instead of a cry. It also shows the reality of improvisational theater, the yes-and version of theater, where people don't end and people will riff off of you, which is really annoying if you've ever hung out with these guys, because they're a constant riffing mode, and sometimes you just got to stop and be like, okay, don't work your material on me. I just want to have a beer and have some pizza. But I thought this to be one of the most truthful looks at actors and comedians and the range of emotions that they feel and express and keep bottled up inside. And it's got some great actors, some great comedians. A lot of them are sort of the second stringers. You know, you got Keegan-Michael Key, who is from Key and Peele, and he did Keanu. He's probably the biggest name in there. You also have Jillian Jacobs from Community, but they're not big names. You don't have the Jerry Seinfelds in this group. You don't have the people who've made hundreds of millions of dollars. You've had people that have had a certain amount of success, but could easily go back down into the trenches fast. And there are some that have just been around for a while, just being in the trenches. And then maybe the trenches are just a little higher than the ones that don't pay anything. But it's one of the most real movies I've seen in a long time. It's definitely worth checking out if you can find it in a local theater or on demand, or eventually it's going to hit DVD and Blu-ray pretty soon. But Don't Think Twice kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about box office. First of all, I said last week that Suicide Squad was going to top the box office with $23 million. It actually came in less. I think the estimates were close to 23, and it's actually under 21. And what we're starting to see happen with Suicide Squad is exactly what I said would happen. Once kids start going back to school, you're starting to see the numbers deflate. And now it's underperforming in sort of day-to-day, everything from like Captain America Civil War and Deadpool. And it's kind of right on track with Batman versus Superman. I still think it has a chance of cracking $300 million, but it may not. But of course, the other films that came out last weekend, you had War Dogs was the number one. It came in under Sausage Party with under $15 million. Kubo and the Two Strings underperformed with 12.6, which is a shame because Kubo and the Two Strings is such a beautiful movie. It's out of the box. Leica doesn't have that gravitas that Pixar has, that it can do something as out of the box as Up or Inside Out. So Kubo and the Two Strings, I think, was a little bit of a hard sell for people. And it's a shame because it's a great film. And then Ben-Hur came in at number 6. It went under Pete's Dragon with $11.2 million. That is a terrible, terrible performance for Ben-Hur. And like I said, it's a bomb because the budget was $100 million and it wasn't the $3 million that War Room was or a lot of these other smaller faith-based movies. Lesson to be learned. Faith-based movies, you can count on your faith base for a good top in $60 million domestic. don't make a movie for more than 30, and you're probably going to be okay. This week, I think that the winner is actually going to be Don't Breathe. Lights Out overperformed this summer. I think Don't Breathe is going to be the same thing. It's got great buzz, it's got great reviews, and it's been a great summer for movies like Conjuring 2 and Lights Out. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. First one that I want to talk about is The Nice Guys, which is one of the most underappreciated films of the summer. This is, of course, on Blu-ray and DVD. It's Shane Black's movie about private investigators in the 1970s. Stars Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe, and they do a great job. This is a funny movie. It's an adult movie. It's a grown-up movie. Not an adult movie. It's about adult movies. But it's a grown-up movie. But it riffs off of so much of 70s nostalgia and 70s sensibilities. It's a snappy, fun movie. The Blu-ray's a little bit stripped down, only has a couple special features to it. But it's totally worth checking out if you missed it this summer, The Nice Guys. There's also The Huntsman, Winter's War, Clown, and Ratchet and Clank. Now on TV, you've got Walking Dead Season 6 and The Strain Season 2. But the big one to look at is Ash vs. Evil Dead Season 1. If you're at all a fan of the Evil Dead movies, it's worth checking out. It's 10 episodes long, so it's kind of like just a big, long movie in itself. Very gory, very violent. It doesn't reference Army of Darkness, I think, for logistic and legal reasons, but it takes place after those three movies. Totally worth checking out. Lots of fun. And the new season's starting up in October. That's it for the show this week. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about The Light Between the Oceans and Morgan. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.